Welcome to Jays Talk on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Show Ali, Julia Kreutz with you this evening as we break down this 10-0 Blue Jays win over the Red Sox. They won 9-0 yesterday, 10-0 today, so I guess we can expect an 11-0 win tomorrow. That's how that works, right?
Yes, my math teacher tells me that that is how it works, Show.
That's Julia Kreutz. Give us a call. Let's chat some Jays. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, star 590 on your cell. 590-590 is the text line. Leave your name and location. It would be nice if it did work like that. If nothing else tonight, Julia, I have learned that you can indeed play at a high level when you are still likely in the throes of a long and eventful night, to say the least. Like, I had seen some people yesterday say, oh, well, I hope the Jays don't get too crazy tonight. They have a ball game to play tomorrow against the Red Sox. Well, they sure seem to have been aware of that today as they cratered the Red Sox all day long. I know it's the Red Sox also.
Right.
They aren't the world beaters they sometimes have been in the not too distant past, but still a pretty big win today, 10-0 after a pretty lengthy celebration last night.
Very much so, and obviously we know the struggles of the Red Sox this season. We know just how much the Blue Jays have dominated them. Believe that bad beating earlier in the second half of the season in Boston really set the tone for the second half for Boston and sort of destroyed their chances to compete this year. So we know that the Blue Jays have been extremely successful against the Red Sox, and we also know that they have struggled, but it's never easy to collect 21 hits and beat an opponent 10-0. The Blue Jays had not one but two sluggers today, a triple short of the cycle, and Danny Jansen and Deoscar Hernandez, let alone after partying the night before, right? Obviously, we know that these guys are professionals, and who knows how long or how late they were, what the night really entailed, but we know that it wasn't a normal night. There was a lot of celebration. There was partying. And for them to come out and do what they did today is really impressive. It shows that they're locked in, that they're understanding that there's a time to work and there's a time to celebrate. And today it was back to business 100%, understanding that the home field advantage is still on the line. The Mariners are leading, I believe, the Oakland A's. Yeah, 3-1 right now, and I'm sure we'll get to the scoreboard too. It was good to see not just the dominance, but also the focus, right? Understanding the assignment and understanding that there's still a lot to play for here, Show.
Absolutely, yeah. They have won two games in a row here against the Boston Red Sox. So going into the final six games of the regular season, the Blue Jays had something, like they had a couple of mathematical formulas awaiting them. So if the Blue Jays go 6-0 over their final six games, they're now two games into those final six games. If they go 6-0, it doesn't really matter what the Mariners and the Rays do. They will have home field advantage throughout the playoffs. If the Blue Jays go 5-1, the Mariners have to go 7-0. The Rays have to, well, it wouldn't matter what the Rays do because the Rays were lagging behind Seattle. If the Blue Jays go 4-2, the Mariners have to go 6-1, and the Rays have to go 6-0. 4-2 against the Boston Red Sox and the Baltimore Orioles with Manoah Stripling, Gausman for this series, and then still Berríos, White, and you would imagine Kikuchi for the next series in Camden Yards. 4-2 with the way this batting order can produce basically at any point against any teams. I think that's reasonable. That's a reasonable ask, I would say.
Pretty doable. Pretty doable. There's something to be said about playing at Camden Yards. That is never easy. But if the Blue Jays keep getting production the way they did from a guy like Danny Jansen, and then you add in Bo Bichette just singling the Red Sox to death here, and Teoscar Hernandez waking up at one point, Vlad Guerrero Jr. joined in on the fun, got a ground rule double. Raimel Tapia was on base, it seems, all the time today, and working out a little bit at home plate whenever he crossed the home plate to score. So the production is there. The pitching was certainly there, right? It has been there for this series. There is, like I said before, the Blue Jays are in control of their own destiny. They just need to make sure that it stays that way, and that means coming into the ballpark and being all business for 3+ hours, however long the game goes. And that is what we saw today. And a nice way to sort of kick off the fan appreciation weekend, right?
Yeah.
I'm sure these fans feel very appreciated after a 10-0 win.
Absolutely, yeah. It was a sellout crowd today at Rogers Center, a crowd that was into it all afternoon and early evening long, let's call it. And it was a lot of fun to be around everyone here today at Rogers Center. I'll say this on the Red Sox. The Red Sox actually have a winning record and a positive run differential against teams that are not named the Blue Jays. That's from Drew Fair Service. That is an absolutely crazy stat. Like the Jays are 15-3 after today against the Red Sox this year, which is crazy. Like that's an absolutely ridiculous stat when you consider they have, so that's 18 games left, played each other, I guess, 19 times after tomorrow's game. So even if they lose tomorrow 15-4 or 16-3 against one opponent in a in one season, like that, it's hard to beat the same team over and over and over and over again. And I know the Red Sox have not been very good this year. Actually, I believe this was the Red Sox 82nd loss of the season, which I think clinches, if that's the case, that would clinch a losing season for Boston.
This is the 83rd, so you're absolutely right.
So there you go. So the Red Sox locked into a losing season, and I'll say this. I've said this to you before. I have no sympathy, zero sympathy for me, for the Boston Red Sox. It's made me crazy to say, but seeing the Red Sox at the bottom of the AL East, I know this is a super homer take. I'm not gonna pretend otherwise. But seeing the Red Sox at the bottom of the AL East gives me a perverse amount of pleasure. It's not right. It's just not right.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I mean, it has been a few painful seasons for a Blue Jays fan and for Blue Jays players when it comes to the Red Sox, and it has been pretty historic the way that Toronto has dominated Boston this year. I just wanted to show that we're here at Rogers Center in the radio broadcast booth, and just looking down on the field. Obviously, everyone is already in the clubhouse, but Otto Lopez was on the field just now with the ball from his first MLB hit, and getting a picture with it. That is pretty cool to witness. He is a guy that's been around quite a bit. He's been in the taxi squad a lot this year, and he's had a really good Triple A season. And getting to see him take the opportunity, and obviously we know that at one point Bradley Zimmer was in there, Kevin Biggio was in there, Gabriel Moreno. Things really, when the wheels fell off, the Blue Jays figured it'd be best to save up on some at-bats for guys like Bichette and Vladdy and George Springer, certainly. But for Otto Lopez to come in and get his first career hit, this has been a game with so many cool moments and so many nice narratives. That's just one to add to it. You always like to see young guys succeed, especially with the amount of history in the minor leagues that a guy like Otto Lopez has.
The crowd gave him a pretty good ovation.
I
don't think everyone knew that it was his first hit right when it happened, and then it flashed on the giant video board just behind the center field wall, and the crowd went nuts, I would say.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. That's very special. So good for Otto Lopez. He wasted no time. I think he swung at the first or second pitch, and it went right up the middle, just past the second base bag. Great stuff by Otto Lopez. Why don't we hit up the phone lines? 416-870-0590, 888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. I see a bunch of text as well on the text line, 590-590. You can leave your name and location. But the phone lines first. Eddie calling in from Fort Erie. Eddie, welcome to Jay's Talk, man.
Thank you, Sho and Julia. How are you guys today?
Good. How are you, Eddie?
I'm pretty good after watching that that game. I mean, that was really cool. And, I enjoy watching the Blue Jays beat the Red Sox as well. I mean, it's like one of those games where you just kick back and have a cocktail and just enjoy one hit after another and one pounding after another by that offense on that Red Sox pitch. And that's probably the favorite thing of the year.
Absolutely. Yeah. Hey, man, I let me ask you this real quick before you get to your question here, Eddie. Danny Jansen had 5 RBI today. What do you think? Danny and Kirk in the lineup together for the rest of the season, no matter what?
Absolutely. You know what's funny? You mentioned that show because a long time ago, I know I'm going to mention another show, but when I was on Blair and Barker, I compared this combination to Martin and Navarro in 2015. Right. The way that they produce and the way that they call a game, it's just like, and some clutch hits, it was just like Martin and Navarro in 15, because that's what makes them great, because they can do many different things as a combination, which is really good. Now, I want to talk about Ross Stripling today because, first of all, he's been really great this year. He had a great pitching performance again. You know, for him to get his 10th win is really good. But and I really think he should start Game 2 of the Wild Card Series. That way they wouldn't have to use Kevin Gausman in Game 2. I mean, I like Gausman as well, but if the series happens to be at home, I'd rather not have Gausman pitch at home because, you know, he's had a few clinkers at home and he doesn't have a good home record. And save Gausman for, like, let's say the Astros series if they get there, because he's the kind of a guy that can definitely set the tone for a series if he goes deep, which he's done that a lot, but doing it on the road is even better. I don't care if it's against the Astros, but I really hope Stripling gets the second game, because I mentioned yesterday on the same show that having, like, a hard thrower going game one is a good thing, you know, because he'll throw it, and then when you have the second game, you'll have a little bit of a drop-off in velocity with Stripling, because he knows how to locate his pitches. It's like watching Marco Estrada, you know. It's like he knows where to locate his pitches, make them, you know, really make the hitters uncomfortable and, you know, just do his thing. So I really hope it's going to be Manoah and Stripling for the first two games of the Wild Card Series.
Thanks for that, Eddie. I hadn't thought about that. I think that you you kind of get, I don't know, a little caught in the Manoah-Gausman 1 and 2.
Sure.
But there are other things to be considered here in terms of strategy, and the home and away splits are actually a pretty interesting one. If Kevin Gausman has had difficulty, and I would have to double check his ERA at home and away, but when you look at what Ross Stripling did for the Blue Jays today, his fifth shutout of the year, six innings, another quality start. This is the first time in his career show that he has reached double digits in wins, so that's a pretty big deal for Ross Stripling. And talking about consistency, he is a guy that has pitched very well at home here at Rogers Center. And if you're thinking about, you know, the wild card set and what comes next and how to better utilize Kevin Gausman, that's a pretty good point. And it's one that I'm sure the Blue Jays are aware of, and I'm sure that it's coming into consideration here with John Schneider and the rest of this coaching staff. Certainly something to think about, and I don't think anyone, show, would be mad if Ross Stripling got the ball in Game 2. That is the level of trust and confidence that he has provided for the Blue Jays. Now, is that a little bit, would it be a little bit off the book? I think so.
Maybe a little.
It's a bit of a gamble for sure, especially when you're talking about teams that are coming into October and really waiting just to pounce on whatever mistake a pitcher makes. One thing that I think that Stripling really has going for him is the absolute command of his pitches. He is so on point, again, not issuing a single walk, knows exactly where to locate the pitches, and even if he has to take a little bit out of it in terms of velocity, he is on point. He's never going to be the big strikeout guy. I want to say that his season high was maybe 7 or 8 strikeouts this year, which was just really eye-popping for Stripling. Today he had 3. It's about location. It's about inducing that soft contact. And that, to me, would be maybe a little bit of a downside too, right? Because in October, we talk a lot about missing bats. We talk a lot about preventing runners from getting on base in the first place, not really allowing your opponent to manufacture those runs. Is that enough to keep him away from Game 2? I think that he still has a pretty good case, especially if you can just get 1 and 2 out of the way and have Kevin Gausman and Manoah ready for an ALDS. There are so many questions and so many interesting narratives coming up for this October roster. This is just one piece of the puzzle for the Blue Jays, who seem to be in a very, very good spot right now, show, when it comes to the planning out of things for the postseason.
Absolutely, yeah. Like you said, I think you'll never be blown away by Ross Stripling's velo, right? Like, he's not exactly going to overpower you with raw stuff, but like you say, a guy who so incredibly and adeptly uses the pitch sequencing, and he turns in uncomfortable at-bats for basically every guy he faces. And Manoah does that to a very impressive degree as well, but in a very different way. Like, Ross Stripling mixes in a lot of great pitches and executes his game plan with such precision. You know, he plants the balls in the coldest part of the heat maps for opposing batters. He does a fantastic job every time out. I do still sometimes wonder what the conversations are for Stripling in terms of whether or not he should be facing the order a third time through. But I think he has been so reliable for so much of this season. Again, going back to, I want to say, June or so, whenever he came back into the starting rotation after the Tommy John surgery for Hyunjin Ryu. But we're probably at the point now where you trust him no matter what. Just, I think he has clearly earned that trust from the pitching staff, from the pitching, you know, the front office, and from his teammates and so on. Having said that, I got to say, I was floored initially that Stripling did not come back out today for the seventh inning, right? Like, this was essentially the season finale for Stripling. He's not going to pitch anymore in the regular season. The next time we see him will be in the playoffs, right? He's not going to pitch, certainly not tomorrow, and certainly not for the rest of this the series in Baltimore. He was at 88 pitches after the end of six, a four-hit shutout, three strikeouts. So like I said, he's not going to see a pitching mound until at least next, let's say, Saturday if Eddie gets his way, or Sunday if there's a Game 3, or if there is a Game 1 of the ALDS, let's say it somehow lines up for Stripling to pitch in the ALDS and not in the wildcard series if the Blue Jays get that far, that's not until Tuesday, October 11th. It is the October 1st today. So there, I'm not sure when we'll see Stripling next, but I kind of thought, regardless, because of that uncertainty, you might just have him throw 100 pitches or something today and maybe see him go into the seventh or maybe even the eighth. But Ben and Caleb said this during the game, and it might be as simple as Anthony Bass just wanting to get some work after having not pitched since this past Tuesday, right? Like, some guys thrive on having a lot of time off. Some guys love being in the rhythm and pitching as much as they humanly possibly can. And maybe he asked them to get him some work with the bullpen just not having thrown a lot, right? We got six innings from Manoah yesterday, three from Kikuchi. Today, six more from Stripling. And then, of course, you add in, to a degree, the off day this past Thursday. So just not a lot of available work for the bullpen as of late. Even with Jordan Romano at the end of this game, right? Jordan Romano came out, Schneider basically ran to the mound. And I kind of thought he was giving him some advice initially. And then he reached for the ball and points to the bullpen, and Simber runs out. And I thought to myself, oh, man, is there something wrong here? And then I realized, no, it's just that Romano hasn't pitched too much. They just wanted him to get some work. He was probably told three batters, and that's it. He hits, I think it was Ref Snyder at the very end. He hits him with a lightly thrown pitch. No intent there, obviously, but that was it. They weren't going to mess around with Romano. So clearly some kind of tune-up day. I wonder if that changed mid-game after they completely essentially dummied the Red Sox for two straight games. I wonder if that was always the plan, or maybe it changed a little bit. Either way, I'm not too mad about how they used the bullpen. I just was kind of surprised that Stripling didn't get a chance to go a little deeper into this one.
Yeah, it does seem like that was the case. You know, bring in these guys who haven't seen a lot of work lately, and at the same time you are maybe sparing Ross Stripling or preventing something from going wrong. I mean, there is a real case to be made here that was a very low leverage situation. The game was all but won, and the Blue Jays knew that they wanted these top relievers to come out and give them some work, because it has been a long time since we've seen these guys in a game situation. And it also works for the fact that Stripling, you know, he could get hurt. Like, the reality of the situation is that a starter, when he's on the mound, we've seen it with Kevin Gausman in the comebacker, right? And he had to leave a game, I think it was 1 2/3 innings. There's a lot that can go wrong. And there's no reason why the Blue Jays should take that type of a risk right now. So at 88 pitches, six innings, they were in a very, very good spot. And with Bass, Phelps, and Romano available out of the pen and in need of some work, that is what made sense for the Blue Jays at this point, right, in the game. I think that if the situation were different, if maybe this game was a little bit tighter, if it was an October game, right, a postseason game is what I mean, we probably would have seen Ross Stripling come back out, because he was on top of stuff today, really inducing that soft contact, popping guys up, even though he didn't necessarily have the strikeout ability. It's all about managing. It's all about strategy, and it begins right now, Sho, even though we are still a few days away from the actual start of the playoffs.
Let's go back to the phone lines, 416-870-0590, *590 on your cell, 1-888-666-0590, 590-590 is the text line as well. Adam calling in from Newmarket. Adam, welcome to Jays Talk.
Yeah, hi there. I have a question for you guys. I want to get your opinion on. So say in a scenario where we go to the third game in the wild card and you start Stripling, would it be an option to go with like an all hands on deck approach and possibly pull Berrios out of the bullpen if you get yourself into a hole? Like, would that be something that would be considered, or would that just be unconventional based on how the schedule would line up with the ALDS?
Hey, Adam, that's a great question, and appreciate the call, man. Here's the thing. I think we have seen Berrios has pitched, I believe, three times in the postseason in his career, dating back to 2017. I believe he faced the Astros once. I think it was the Yankees another time. Maybe actually it was the Yankees twice and the Astros once, I believe. I think that's how it ended up lining up for Berrios. But either way, in 2017, he actually did come out of the bullpen. He came in for, I believe it was Ervin Santana. Yeah, here we go. Ervin Santana started that game. He threw two innings. He allowed three hits, four earned runs, and Berrios did actually come in. Now, he had three innings of relief for Santana, but he gave up five hits, three earned runs. He did have four strikeouts, didn't walk a guy, give up a home run in those three innings of work. Now, again, that was 2017. It's now 2022. He is clearly a different pitcher. He went on to pitch, I think, in, I want to say 2018 or 2019 in that postseason, and pitched in the shortened postseason in 2020 as well. And I don't think it is a little unconventional, I would say, to Adam's point. I do think the Blue Jays would probably, with the kind of relievers they have on this team, if Stripling is the guy going in Game 3, I get the sense they would rather deploy an all-hands-on-deck with just throwing the entire bullpen at them. Maybe you get guys going for one or maybe two outs or something like that, if that's the case, or three batters and two outs if that's what needs be. But I think they'd rather do that than have Berrios come out of the bullpen.
At the same time, we have seen Clayton Kershaw come out of the bullpen, right, in certain situations in the postseason. Jameson Taillon, when the Yankees clinched the American League East division, he started that game here. And postgame, a reporter asked him, what would you like your role to be, right, in the postseason, in the DS or whatever? And Taillon said, you know, I'm a starter. That's clearly where I would like to be, and I think that I would do well. And then reporter followed up and said, would you be open to coming out of the bullpen? He said, 100% I'd be open to come out of the bullpen. Now, whatever the team needs from me, I'm here. I want to win. And I'm pretty sure that if you ask Berrios, his answer will be very similar. He understands that he's had his ups and downs. His last start was pretty encouraging. If he can keep that up and sort of give the Blue Jays some consistency, which has been so elusive, great. But at the same time, there is a case to be made that if Ross Stripling is getting a start, why not make Berrios available out of the pen if he's rested and if he's ready to go? Because that could give you some pretty important strikeout potential from a guy with a lot of playoff experience in different ways, right? Who has had that role of reliever sort of inadvertently, I want to say, right? Things did not go well in that game for the Minnesota Twins. But at the same time, he answered the call. He went ahead and he did what was expected of him. And then, you know, 2019 and 2020, Berrios actually pitched really, really well in the couple of games that he saw in the postseason. I don't think that the Blue Jays would be quick to discard that possibility at all. Then again, they may not even have to think about it, because Ross Stripling has been extremely dominant in just following his game plan. He knows exactly what's expected of him, and he's delivered way more often than not.
Yeah, I think I still lean on the side of it's unlikely, because I think the Blue Jays are very comfortable with the Anthony Basses, the Tim Mazes of the world. And I have a feeling if they need to put out any kind of fire in a Game 3, Tim Mazes is probably going to be the first guy out of that bullpen, depending on where the game is, right? Certainly, you have to see how long a potential Stripling start would be, or a Gosman start, depending on how you're flip-flopping Game 2 or 3. Let's go to the text line, 590-590, name and location, please. William and Georgina, Will texting in to say, I want to state this right now so I don't forget. I wouldn't trade Danny Jansen for Johnny Bench. What an animal. Let's bleeping go show. I almost actually read it the way he texted it.
So
I'm glad I paused. Tim and Tony Creek, great win today. Envy Hazel Mays sitting beside the Jays dugout watching all the fun. There actually was a moment, the Blue Jays posted it on their Twitter account, but there was a moment where Vladdy was sitting like on the steps of the dugout on the far end, and Teoscar Hernandez walked up behind him, and like he was drinking from a bottle of water, and he just squeezed the bottle of water and just went all over Vladdy's face. And in the cameras, in the back of like in the camera well, which is right next to that end of the dugout, you can see Hazel kind of pointing and laughing a little bit, which is pretty great.
Absolutely losing it. I love it.
That's so good. I love it. I don't blame Hazel either, considering the amount of champagne and beer she was soaked in yesterday, and also generally speaking, the water she has gotten dumped on her from Vladdy Jr. over the course of the entire season.
Revenge comes in many different ways.
I see one text here from Mike and Victoria. Hey, Show and Julia, congratulations to the Jays. If they unfortunately have to play in Seattle, I am in. What chance am I ever going to be able to see the Jays in a playoff almost locally? 2-hour ferry ride downtown Victoria to downtown Seattle. Mike and Victoria. That's pretty cool, actually. Hey, I mean, I certainly hope selfishly, I hope they play here. But if they do play in Seattle, I do wish you the best of luck in getting tickets. Because I got to say, after a 21-year playoff drought, I don't know what the secondary market is for tickets, but that is going to be a crazy scene for tickets in Seattle.
Yes, but we also know that the Blue Jays have such a contingent of fans in Seattle, and that is a good point. I don't think they'll be deprived of support if they have to go and play in Seattle, because we know how that ballpark gets when the Blue Jays are in town. So that is certainly another level to consider. And just on Danny Jansen, I'm going to be honest here, Show. I hadn't realized that he had 5 RBIs today until you mentioned it. That is pretty unbelievable. And we were talking in the pregame show about how he's not a qualified hitter this year because he has missed a lot of time with injuries and stuff. But his season, just absolutely unbelievable. So this was his 15th homer he hit today, which is a career high for him. Over his last 28 games, he is 30 for 82. That's a .366 batting average, 18 RBIs, and a 1.130 OPS. That's really, really impressive. And it sort of revives a little bit the debate to me of, will the Blue Jays choose to carry 3 catchers in the postseason? Because that having Gabriel Moreno as a backup would really open up a window or an avenue for John Schneider to use Danny Jansen and Alejandro Kirk a little more at will and not have to worry about the fatigue in the catcher's position or anything of the sort in October. I mean, Jansen is certainly swinging the bat well enough to warrant being in the lineup every day. But what does that do for the catcher's position? Again, one of many, many questions that the Blue Jays must answer ahead of the wild card series.
Had Danny Jansen not gotten injured, I think you might be having a different kind of conversation. Like, I remember a couple weeks ago, Ben Nicholson Smith and I had the conversation about, is Alejandro Kirk a top 10 catcher in Major League Baseball as of right now, right? So you still have to account for guys like Salvador Perez and Will Smith and JT Realmuto and maybe even some of the older guys as well. Wilson Contreras, certainly, maybe Yasmani Grandal. Depending, I know he's had a kind of an injury-plagued season. The White Sox are going to miss the playoffs as well, but there are a lot of catchers you can talk about. I honestly think had Danny Jansen not been injured, you're probably having a conversation of not just is Alejandro Kirk a top 10 pitcher, but do the Blue Jays have 2 top 10 catchers? I think that's a worthwhile question. Even if Danny Jansen is not, maybe he's like in that 11 to 15 range. That's still pretty darn good, and he has played absolutely phenomenally well. Certainly today, 5 RBI, but certainly over the course of the whole season, whenever he's been in the lineup. Let's go back to the phone lines. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. We'll get back to the text line in a sec, but Jennifer calling in from Toronto. Jennifer, welcome back to Jay's Talk.
Oh, hi. I just have a couple comments. Great pitching, Stripling, great batting by Bichette, blah, 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 blah. I think they have to revisit this batting order. Kirk and especially Chapman are super scuffling, especially Chapman. He's hitting .083 over the last 7 games and like .150 or something over the last few weeks. You know, the eye test, I thought I was just looking at it, but Chapman has not looked good. Great on defense, that's wonderful. But I hear a lot about swing and miss, and I'd like to get your opinion. I know Nate Pearson had 1 clunker out of 9 appearances for Buffalo, but he's throwing 99-100. He's been good 8 of 9. I watched Kikuchi last night, and in the playoffs, you don't need soft tossers. And I'm a bit concerned about where our playoff lineup will be. Like, we have Jackie Bradley and Bradley Zimmer. I'd prefer Bradley. Where's Kevin Biggio? I know we need a backup infielder. So I'd like your thoughts on that. Please.
Yeah, sure.
Thank you.
Absolutely, Jennifer. I think before you go, Jennifer, let me ask you a real quick question. I know you wanted to talk about the batting order and just how things are shifted. And this is a conversation I think we've all had a lot about, like Chapman, for example. And you bring up a good point. He strikes out a lot. I think there was a point after the end of the All-Star break where it looked like he was going to hit a whole bunch of home runs, and he kind of cooled off for a little bit there.
Yeah.
He is. He's really streaky. I 100% agree. So let's say you do move Chapman down in the order, and you do move Teoscar Hernandez, let's say, up in the order, and I think he probably deserves it right now. Do you risk messing with the bottom of the order for guys like Tapia and certainly Danny Jansen and Whit Merrifield, or would you leave that alone?
Just one of them. I would put Teoscar and then Kirk because Jansen's going to hit for power. You know what I mean? Kirk, we know his liability on the bases and that. But I think we see so many wasted RBI opportunities. And I don't see how Teoscar doesn't deserve hitting fourth. I don't care where Chapman and Kirk hit, but I think Chapman was fine hitting eighth.
All right, I like it. I don't entirely mind that one. Thanks for the call, Jennifer. Appreciate you calling in on a Jays Talk Saturday here. You know what? I think we are going to see the batting order get shuffled around a little bit here. Let me ask you Jennifer's question, though, Julia. What do you do with Kevin Biggio in the playoffs? Because it does kind of – I know he almost self-describes as a super utility
that's
guy.
Right.
So if that's the case, then he probably is not going to be starting really ever at any point, especially if the lineup is as healthy as you hope it is. Lourdes Gurriel Jr. apparently is on the machines and is close to a return. Santiago Espinal's timetable has – somewhat been moved up, according to John Schneider, in the pregame. So maybe we see one, if not both of them, before the end of the regular season on Wednesday. So that obviously will change the calculus a little bit. But certainly, let's say for tomorrow, if neither of them play, do you move Teoscar Hernandez up there? And then what do you do with Biggio after that?
Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, and I don't have it in front of me, so I won't be able to tell you, but Teoscar did hit fourth fairly recently, I believe, either last week or even earlier this week. Again, I don't have it in front of me, but I do remember that happened. I would be totally fine with that. I think that he has certainly put himself in the position to bat cleanup for this team. He's Kirk, right? It's when he's not hitting, he's still getting on base. He did not get a hit today. He did get a walk. That's kind of been his MO, and when he's struggling, he's still finding ways to get on base. Does it warrant right now maybe lowering him a little bit? I would say yes. And Matt Chapman has been kind of shuffled around in this lineup quite a bit this year. He doesn't seem to have any egotistical feelings about it. He seems to be a guy that is down for whatever the coaching staff thinks may be best. And right now, because he is so streaky, it may be best to think about maybe hitting eighth, maybe hitting seventh. And Teoscar certainly should be moved up because he is a guy that has the ability to do it all, like we saw today. He really did it all. He was a triple shy of the cycle, as I mentioned before, had that homer, which was a pretty impressive one, his 23rd of the season. Again, a guy that also missed some time with injury this year, who is a two-time Silver Slugger and who is looking healthy enough to do some damage here. So I would expect the Blue Jays to use these next few games again to do some experimenting and see how things roll. But when it comes time for that wild card series, I would say that Teoscar, for his current play and for the fact that he's a guy who has some experience already in Major League Baseball, he should be batting cleanup at the very least for the Blue Jays.
I think that'll happen sooner rather than later. I honestly, I really do think that. Maybe even as soon as the Baltimore series starting on Monday. It's very, very, very possible. And like you said, not just recently, but just maybe historically is the wrong word, but just as far as the rest of the season has gone, he hit cleanup for a large chunk of the season before and after the oblique injury, right? So I think we might see that again as soon as Monday, maybe even as soon as tomorrow after his performance today. And he's certainly been playing a lot more consistency from Teoscar Hernandez is what we've seen as of late. Let's squeeze in one more call, actually, then we'll hit the break. Steven calling in from Toronto. Steven, welcome to Jay's Doc.
Hey, how's it going? Great show. I wanted to call and ask what your opinion was on the potential of leaving Espinal and Gurriel off the wild card roster. They're both out with injury, and in order to make room for a guy like Moreno and Bradley and Dimmer, just so you have more options.
So you're able to keep Kirk
and Danny both in the lineup with the way that Danny's hitting now and his OPS and being a three-game series, and you're able to rejig moving to the next round.
Steven, I appreciate the call. I will first say that whatever happens, rejigging the roster, and there certainly are going to be some moves made here. I believe the deadline is 12 p.m. the day of game one. So I think we have some time to know when. I think you might not even know what the final moves are known right up until that same day on the next week Friday. But no matter what those moves are, Danny Jansen and Alejandro Kirk, in my opinion, have to absolutely 1,000% be on the, well, certainly on the roster, but in that batting order on an everyday basis. That's where I fall on that. I think they absolutely have to be, as Steven mentioned. I do wonder about Moreno because, and I do think it kind of begs the question, do the Blue Jays, or are they going to go right to the max of 13 pitchers? That's the limit for this. I'm not sure if that's just for the first round or if it's for the entire playoffs, but they can carry 13 pitchers at the very least for the wild card series. If that's the case, I suspect they will carry less pitchers into the wild card series. So you might actually see, someone asked yesterday, would you take Yusei Kikuchi on the playoff roster? If the rosters were big enough, maybe, I guess. But I actually have a sneaking suspicion that neither Kikuchi or Mitch White will make the playoff roster. And instead, they will opt to have Jackie Bradley Jr. and someone like Gabriel Moreno on the roster instead. It certainly seems like they very much value the positional versatility of a guy like having Jackie Bradley Jr. out there in the outfield, and I think I prefer him bat-wise and even moving around there-wise over Zimmer, even though Zimmer is a good pinch runner, but like that's kind of it, right? I think JBJ brings a little more. But beyond that, if that's the case, if they do carry less pitchers, there will be room for a couple more position players, and I do think maybe you do want to roll the dice with three catchers. They've done the three-catcher thing for a large part of the season. They have, even going back to when like Heinemann was on the roster and so on, right? So they have done that. So I do think that's very possible, but Moreno might be on the very edge. He's probably one of the last couple of decisions have to be made. But if the decision is, would you rather have Gabriel Moreno or Bradley Zimmer on the roster? I think I take Moreno.
Yeah, anytime. And if Lourdes and Santiago are healthy, I don't think that's a question, really. It will be them, and that's that. And the Blue Jays will figure out everything else. But if they're not, then things do get interesting. And, I keep coming back to we have a few more games left, a handful of games in the regular season. And there is a lot that will be decided based on how things go here for the rest of this weekend, what's left of it, and the start of next week. Again, fascinating question. But if Lourdes and Santiago are ready to go, they will be on that roster. And I think even if they're not at 100%, maybe at 70 or 80, we will see them. We will see them on that roster for sure.
I see a text here from KM in Norfolk. 19 runs in two games. I'm not messing with any part of this lineup and risking someone's routine. I see here one from Robbie from Georgina. Gotta love seeing the bottom of the order hit as well as they have recently. Does Tapia's production decrease any urgency to get Lourdes back for the wild card round? I think they would like to get Lourdes back for the wild card round, but again, it really just depends on how well he responds to the various recovery as it ramps up. Again, Schneider saying he was hitting off the machine today, so it's a possibility we see Lourdes before the wild card round. But I do agree with Robbie. It's the way things are going right now, at the very least after these two games, and we'll have to see how they play tomorrow behind Gausman and certainly behind Berríos and White in Baltimore. But if they continue to play like this, Robbie's right, there won't be a ton of urgency. Continue to send us texts at 590-590, name and location. Still some time to give us a call, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cellular device. We're going to step aside, take a very quick break. On the other side of the break, your text, your phone calls, and the Bet365 standings update as well. But that's all straight ahead. That's all still to come on Jays Talk. I'm Sho, that's Julia, on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
We talked before the game, definitely wanted Jordy to pitch today. And, you know, it's not the ideal situation to come in a 10-run game with your closer. But I think in order to keep him sharp going down the stretch and into the postseason, you know, that's kind of what we talked about collectively before the game. And if you're going to do that in a game like this, I think the right thing to do is get him out, with the appropriate number of pitches so his availability is good going forward. But that was kind of the plan. He was a little bit shocked when I went out there, but understood it, and I think it worked out well.
Worked out well indeed, I would say. They still won 10-0, so not exactly the most dire of situations, but that's John Schneider talking about the decision to lift Jordan Romano for Adam Simber in the top of the ninth inning. Welcome back to Jays Talk, of course. Sho Ali and Julia Kreutz alongside you as we discuss this 10-0 win for the Blue Jays over the Red Sox. We'll go back to the text line in a second again. Shoot us a text at 590-590, name and location. But first, the Bet365 standings update. With Bet365, you can watch thousands of live games, build your own bet, and you can even make a bet while the game's still being played. 19+, play responsibly, Ontario only. I'm actually waiting on Bet365 to cash me out on my Justin Verlander AL Cy Young bet, which I made like in the preseason. So
come on, guys.
I know they technically have to wait until they actually announce the award winner, but hey, I did actually also hedge it by betting on Alek Manoah, so I'm happy that two of those guys will probably finish pretty highly in Cy Young voting, but
aren't you a mastermind? Wow.
But, I will say I'm not exactly the most skilled gambler, so that it worked out that way is, I will completely admit, pure dumb luck for me personally.
Well, I mean, that's more than I can say for myself. There is a reason why I don't touch that stuff, Sho.
Okay. Well, let's check out the standings update. And again, the Mariners did win today. They beat the Oakland Athletics 5-1. The Yankees blanked the Baltimore Orioles 8-0. Not that that really matters anymore. I mean, we used to kind of watch what the Yankees were doing just in case the Blue Jays could catch them. Doesn't really matter. It makes no difference anymore. So right now, after the Seattle win, it's Toronto at 89-69, Seattle at 87-70, and Tampa Bay at 86-71. And I believe in about 5 minutes' time, the Rays will take on the Astros. So, you know, if the Rays lose, they're still locked into a wild card spot no matter what. So if they lose tonight, they will simply be a game and a half back of the Mariners. If they win, they will narrow that gap to half a game. But still right now, the Blue Jays, by winning even with the Seattle win, the Blue Jays are still a game and a half up on the Seattle Mariners with 4 games to go. 1 more against the Boston Red Sox and 3 against the Baltimore Orioles. Let's get back to the text line. 590-590. Leave your name and location, please. Let's see. This is one from Stefan in Toronto, and Stefan has the accent aigu, so I hope I pronounced that correctly, Julia. But Stefan says, this was the Blue Jays we thought we had at the start of the season. It was such a clean game from the hitting, the defense, the pitching, the bullpen. If the boys keep it up, we are going to be a team to mess with come playoffs, regardless if we're at home or on the road. I don't think Tampa or Seattle can match our lineup 1-9, especially if Merrifield and Jansen keep it going. It's going to be interesting to see if Moreno makes the lineup, because Kirk and Danny need to be in this lineup every game. The OPS from both of them alone trumps any power stats, and that's what you need for playoff baseball. I like his point, and it's something we talked about before. I like the point from Stefan about the bottom of the lineup hitting very, very well. They certainly continue that today. I mean, the bottom four in the order were Teoscar Hernandez, Raimel Tapia, Danny Jansen, and Whit Merrifield. Teoscar Hernandez and Danny Jansen alone had a combined 7 RBI, and then you add in Tapia's RBI as well. 8 RBI of the 10 today coming from Teoscar Hernandez, Tapia, Danny Jansen, and Whit Merrifield also adding on a hit as well. The bottom of the order, I mean, the whole lineup has to produce in the playoffs. No, obviously, right? But at the same time, the bottom of the order for so much of the season had been, I don't want to go so far as to say automatic outs, but they had been, for a large part of the year, been struggling a little bit to all come together at once. And it's probably, it almost feels like a microcosm for the Blue Jays season as a whole, because how many times did we talk about at the beginning of the year, oh man, the Blue Jays, the hitting is on fire, but the pitching can't get an out, or the pitching is absolutely terrific, but the bats are completely cold, or the bullpen is not super consistent where the starting pitching is. So I do agree, even against the relatively hapless Red Sox, it does feel like things have come together, and I do think it's very, very, very encouraging to see production coming consistently, not just in streaks, but consistently from Tapia, Jansen, Merrifield, and to a lesser degree, Teoscar Hernandez.
That is something that I think we have discussed a few times, show, in which it seemed like the Blue Jays were going to click, and it seemed like the well-rounded brand of baseball that we have all been waiting for was upon us. And then something else happened. They lost in a blowout game, or someone got hurt, or the pitching faltered, or the bats went cold again. We've been on the verge of a breakout for this team, it feels like, all season long. Yes, the Red Sox are not a great baseball team. I don't think anyone will disagree with that at this point. But it does seem like this right here is the type of series, the type of mentality that can really help a team build momentum, and not just momentum, but confidence. I do think that momentum and confidence come hand in hand, especially in baseball, a sport that is known for its streakiness, a sport that is known for rewarding failure just as much as, if not more than, success. It is an aspect that is very, very real in this sport. But when you have a 9-0 win, you celebrate with your buddies, people who have been there every single day for so many months. And that's something that I've spoken to John Schneider about as well. You see your teammates a lot more often sometimes than you see your family during the season. That is a bond that is very special and very real for these guys. So you have a moment of levity, you have a moment of camaraderie in which you're sort of reminded of why you're doing that and why it is so special to do it with this group of guys. And then you come out and you put up a 10-0 win. What does that do for momentum? And again, John Schneider has spoken very, very candidly about momentum and about believing that it is a real thing in baseball. To me, this is sort of the breakout that the Blue Jays have been waiting for, and very, very excited, looking forward to seeing if they can keep it up and finally get over that hump of a couple of good games, and then we're back to square one. It does feel like this is the closest we've been to the Blue Jays playing their best baseball of the season, and just in time too, Joe.
You mentioned the bonding. I see a text here from Curtis in Toronto. The night of competitor bonding prepares them for the road ahead. Last night did better for these guys than the hangover. Proof is Chappie can do a pinky up swig while interviewed on TV, or throw down the chug in a team cheers and demolish. Let's go Blue Jays. And then he also says, take into consideration that the one game that put the Jays out of the playoffs last year was the Red Sox game. So the fact that the record now shows how our guys feel should scare teams. And I think Curtis was texting about how the Blue Jays after today are 15-3 against the Boston Red Sox on the season. I did see, actually, I don't know if people saw this last night on TV. And Hazel, again, doing fantastic work. She was trying to talk to a bunch of them at once. I think they were all standing around like the cooler where they keep the beverages.
Yeah.
And I think it was Chapman. I think he tried to shotgun a beer. Like, he tried to bite a hole in the bottom of the can.
Oh, my God.
And then everyone else was just cracking open, opening the top of the can, and he tried to shotgun it. And, I mean, look, I feel like there was probably less beer consumed last night by actual human beings versus the amount of that just ended up on the floor.
Just soaked. Yes, on
yeah.
the floor.
Yeah. So maybe they just weren't actually all that hungover. Maybe they just didn't drink all that much in the end. But I did that. It actually did make me laugh, and I think that's funny. It's a good point from Curtis. I did want to get to a couple more texts here. There's one here. Let's just make sure I can find. Oh, here it is. Mark from Thorold. I'm not overly concerned about who starts in the playoff round. I'm more concerned about getting through the O's series without anyone getting hurt, getting beaned. There is some bad blood between the two clubs, and I hate to think Vladdy getting one off the wrist or head. We have to make it through that series with no injuries or brawls. You know what? It's not a bad thing to be aware of, certainly. I think the Blue Jays, I think they're aware of it. I personally think they are aware of that.
Yeah.
But still, like you in the heat of the moment, you never really know what happens. But I do think for a team that plays each other a lot, I would hope that kind of stuff doesn't spill over in like a meaningless series specifically for the Baltimore Orioles.
That is a good point. Certainly something to keep in mind. You obviously expect your opponents to be professional, right? To have the decency not to do that on purpose. And for the most part, I think that is a safe bet that people will be professional on the baseball field. At the same time, tempers could very well be running high at any point from here until the end of the regular season. And it is a real thing. It is a real concern to make sure not just that, you know, someone gets hit on purpose, but to avoid injury in general. And to my point earlier, pulling Ross Stripling after six innings, that may have had something to do with it. Hey, let's make sure that this guy is healthy. This is a blowout. We don't need him there anymore. Let's make way for a couple more pitchers to come in and get some work. That also is true for the lineup, and that is probably why we saw John Schneider make so many moves in the latter part of this game, taking out guys like George Springer, who is battling, you know, the lingering elbow issue, Vladdy Jr. himself, Bo, and so on. It is something to consider. That said, the Blue Jays can't really afford not to have those guys playing every day. There is still a lot to play for in this last handful of games. So we will see them for sure. It's just a matter of how to utilize them and make sure that they are playoff ready and that there is no, that there are no bad incidents, let's say, no bad luck incidents, if you will, ahead of that meaningful and elusive for some time for the Blue Jays here, October baseball.
I see another text here from Scotty in Central Ontario. He says, "Hey guys, wondering if you can explain the roster rules of the postseason. How many players make the cut? What happens if someone gets hurt? Can they bring someone else in?" So it is a 26-man roster in the postseason. Prior to every round of postseason eligible players, so guys acquired after the trade deadline, you know, for example, can't be added to the postseason roster, you know, things like that. But a club, in the case of injury, a club can ask the commissioner's office to replace someone who is injured. But Ben and Caleb were talking about this. That player is then ineligible for the rest of that round and the following round if the team does advance that far. A pitcher may only be replaced by another pitcher and a position player by another position player. So that's how it works. So if you're like kind of sort of injured, you better hope that it's, you know, like if you get replaced, it better be more serious, essentially, because they essentially lose your services for the rest of that round and the following round as well. So I think they're not going to make that call to the commissioner's office unless it is super serious, I would think. So that's how it works, though. 26-man roster. I believe prior to 2020 it was 25. But now for going forward after 2020, it's 26. It seems to have been a pandemic rule that just stuck around.
Right. And I would say that's a good remnant of the pandemic season. I think that it's teams certainly appreciate it, having an extra guy. It does make a difference. It's a sport that really does take a toll, especially this late in the year after having played an entire regular season. There are certain limitations as to what a team can do with 25, and, you know, having that extra guy does open some doors here as to what a team can do strategically and in other ways as well.
And I see here as well, any player who's on the 40-man roster, yeah, or the 60-day IL as of the end of the day on August 31st is also eligible for the postseason. So anyone who is, you know, they transfer a lot of guys onto the 60-day IL or off the 60-day IL, or if you're still on the 40-man and you haven't been, like, DFA'd or anything, you're also still eligible, even if you're not on the 26-man roster as of the trade deadline, so, which is good to know.
Very, very good to know. There's so many intricacies to postseason roster rules. It's maybe I'll chat with my buddy Keegan Matheson. We can have an FAQ of some sort on MLB.com because it is super, super particular. Just adds another layer of strategy. Yeah. You know how much I love it. It's a good time for managers. It can certainly be fun to sort of, I don't know, try to get all the pieces of the puzzle to fit together in a good way for October. And it's not just the Blue Jays that are going through that, right, Sho? Every single team that has made the playoffs is faced with these decisions at this point, and there are some moves to be made here.
Julie, we have a couple minutes left here, pretty much 90 seconds. But still, before we go, I just want to throw this out there. This was our last Jays talk of the season, to the chagrin of few and delight of most, I'm sure. But it will be Blair and Barker the rest of the way. I know my role on Jays talk. I have no problems with it. Blair and Barker are the Manoah and Gausman. So you and I are like the,
right.
They're like the Anthony Bass, Zach Pop of the relief Blair and Barker out of the bullpen, right? Like sort of new additions.
Oh.
Bass returning after some time away, which I think also works in my case because I did some Jays Talk things sort of kind of last year.
Nice.
They make some steady, relatively steady appearances. They give up a homer every now and again, right? So that in mind, Blair and Barker, they were brought in to do the big-time Jays Talk episodes in the big moments, so they'll have every episode of this show starting tomorrow through to whenever the season ends in the playoffs. But doing this with you have been fun all season long, so we've gotten to do some really fun ones. So here's hoping for some more Jays Talk relief appearances in 2023.
Absolutely. I would love to. This has been so much fun. Didn't necessarily expect this to happen, right, at the start of the season. It's nice to when opportunities present themselves, and it really has been such a fun time. I'm really, really glad not just to be doing this with you, show, but also getting to know you a little better.
Yeah.
I consider you a friend now. I really do.
We will hang out, I'm sure, throughout the rest of the season.
Oh, absolutely we will. Thank you so much for this. I really appreciate
it. It's a lot of fun, Julia. That's Julia Kreutz. I'm Show Alley. Thanks for listening to Blue Jays Baseball, served up by the always game-ready Jack Link's Meat Snacks. Feed your wild-side baseball fans. Jays win 10-0. Blair and Barker have you covered the rest of the way. It's been fun. Talk to you later.